From the shores of Puget Sound, this is Greener Views, a unique media resource for information, education, consultation, and fun. Greener Views is a part of the Healthy Homecast Network and is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Each episode will introduce and connect you with services, products, practices, organizations, and groups that focus on the health, happiness, safety, well-being, charity, and community of all. Find us on the web at www.greenerviews.net. And now, your host, Daryl Whalen.
Well, good evening and welcome to episode 41 of Greener Views. I'm Daryl Whalen, along with Randy Parcell, back from the anniversary honeymoon.
Ooh.
Last week, and we missed him dearly, but we pulled it off, and doing the audio, and Michael Schwartz, our video engineer that helped us get the audio stuff rolling as well last week. Joining us this week is Sarah Chapman from Flowers of Volunteer Park, as well as a number of other things that we'll talk about. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Is brought to you exclusively by HealthyPainting.com and AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. If you'd like to advertise or be a sponsor or donate, please contact info@greenerviews.net or call 206-650-4587. So we usually start out by talking about how I know the guest, and I really don't know Sarah that well, but we met at a networking event up in Shoreline. It was about public speaking, and it was a full house, and we had an opportunity to break off into little groups and chit-chat, and we got to talk about some of the little bit of things that we had going on in our life, and I found out about this book and the fundraising efforts that she was doing with Volunteer Park.
The conservatory. Separate.
Okay. Well, we'll start. We'll make sure when we get rolling that we'll start out, get that squared away. So welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us today. And we usually start out, give us a brief elevator pitch about, you can talk a little bit about yourself, about the book. What is the book?
Can I hold it up?
Just sure, you can hold it up whenever you feel so inclined. Like, you can keep it held up the entire time.
The whole time, right. This is the book.
This is her book that she wrote, and she's also going to talk about another art project that she's doing with her daughter that involves the book.
Yes.
And I also know that you've been a long-time graphic designer, graphic artist.
And a gardener. Hey.
So why don't you tell us
a little bit
about what the book is?
Okay. Well, it starts with a camera, right? A little camera. I've been taking pictures since I'm a kid, since somebody gave me a Kodak Brownie. And I took the Kodak Brownie and my first roll of black and white film, of course, to the New York World's Fair. I know I'm dating myself. And, you know, I still have that roll of, you know, those pictures. They were pretty good. They were pretty good. And then, when I got married, young, somebody gave us a single lens reflex camera. And it was the greatest wedding present in the world, because then you have to learn how to use it. So for years, I had this little love affair with a camera. And then with digital, you know what happens, right? You start taking a million pictures. But the point is, you get a lot better, because anything you do a lot, I really believe in that 10,000 hours thing, that it really does make a difference. So I'm going around, and I like this because it fits in my pocket, so it's always with me. And I go to the conservatory, and it's really nice. And then it's a great place to take out-of-town guests. I don't know if you've ever done that, especially in the winter. It's terrible out. It's beautiful in. So I went there one November with some out-of-town guests, and then 2 weeks later, I had more out-of-town guests. And they like gardening, and I thought, well, I'll take them back to the conservatory. I've seen it. I just saw it, but I thought, well, how bad can it, you know, what's bad, right? Pretty flowers. So I go there, and it was completely different.
As flowers tend to be.
Well, they change the displays.
Okay, gotcha.
They completely change it out. Actually, they do that 6 times a year, big changes, but it just so happened to be in that 2 week thing. And I was so blown away at how totally transformed it was that I said, I have to come back here. Mm-hmm. So I start coming back. You start taking all these pictures. And then what do you do with them? What do you do? Like, they sit on your hard drive. Nobody wants to look at 500 pictures of, you know, hyacinths. They don't. But so then,
somebody does. There's a flower nerd out there.
Oh, man. Even everybody likes editing, you know. Show me your best. So anyway, the idea for a book was born because I looked it up and there was no book at all about the conservatory.
Mm.
Nothing. And I, you know, you get an idea and sometimes you have to run with it, right, Daryl?
Great. So you became, did you become a little bit of a tour guide in the process?
I have learned a lot. I certainly have learned more about the conservatory than I ever would have thought. I mean, who knew? I didn't know that the conservatory is run by the Parks Department. And I've learned a lot about city politics and about, you know, all kinds of political things, which I had no idea.
How about if you give us a little rundown on the history of the conservatory and what it's all about? Because I, to be honest with you, I've never been there.
Oh my God, you've never been there. Well, first,
how about a little a little volunteer park conservatory 101?
I don't know if you can see this, but there's a little picture on the back of my book that shows the outside of the conservatory. Can you get that?
And if you send us any kind of link or anything to the actual picture of the conservatory, Michael can put it into the
video. I can do that.
Video. Perfect.
I can do that, but I have a bigger one.
What's that?
I do that anyway.
He does that anyhow, yeah.
So the conservatory, and of
she
course...
She was very impressed by that, by the way.
What was... Wait.
About his fine videograph, placing the pictures and the words and stuff
in
there.
Yeah. Here's a better
picture. Oh, that's
a
beautiful one, yeah.
Here's a better picture, a bigger picture. So it was built 100 years, it opened 100 years ago, and I believe...
Happy birthday.
Am I tilted? How's that? So this is the centennial year, and the park, Volunteer Park, was made by Olmsted, the same guy that designed Central Park in New York.
Mm.
So it has a special structure, and the conservatory... was imported from somewhere. It's like a big kit, right? And they put it up. Of course, the original frame was wood, and that's kind of rotting. So they've renovated a lot of it, but they do need to raise funds to get the last of it. What they've done is make aluminum supports that look just like the wood, so you can't tell. So it's very nice. The thing about the conservatory that's so great is that they... It's funny. Let me start a different thing. One of the things that they do for their plant collection is when the customs intercepts plants that are, what do you call that, forbidden or illegal, illegal orchids or something, they go to the conservatory, which is so cool. So they have a special source, and of course people donate, and they have 5 houses with bromeliads and palms and ferns and the seasonal house and palm. I don't remember. It's gorgeous. The whole thing is, it's gorgeous. And you go there and you feel like it's oxygen and it's rejuvenating. It's really thrilling to go there. And you have to go.
Flowers and nature are beautiful things. So where exactly is it located at? Where is Volunteer Park?
Well, thank you for asking. Silly me. It is on Capitol Hill. To get there, for those Seattleites looking, you go out, get off I-5 at Olive Way, and then go on Broadway to Aloha and turn up there and go up the hill, that beautiful area of all those gorgeous houses.
Is it near the Asian Art Museum?
Right next door.
Oh, okay. Then I have
right
been there.
Next door.
I have been there before. That's beautiful out there.
It's really nice. And most people, when they see it, they say, oh, I want my garden to look like that. Well, all you need is a staff like they have, right?
And
it could look that
Tristan, one of our past guests is an amazing architect, landscape architect.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the work hours.
Yeah. Got to hire a professional.
Well, and then somebody has to actually do it, you know, pull the weeds. And
how many people is it strictly, it's called Volunteer Park. Is that because everybody volunteers up there or what's the deal?
You know, that's a really good question. I do not know why it's called Volunteer Park.
Okay. Well, you do your homework and you get back with us.
I will. But I do know that the conservatory itself has a staff of at least a couple of paid full-time gardeners. And then they have one person who runs the gift shop and coordinates the volunteers. And other than that, they have a lot of volunteers.
Yeah.
They do.
So when we met, I don't even remember it was probably back in the spring or something. You were talking about that, you know, like it's no big surprise that the economy has gotten a little challenging and that they hadn't normally had the kind of issues around the financial part of the park that they do now. And your efforts were part of, I imagine, a concerted effort on a lot of people's part to raise money for the park. Is that correct?
Well, kind of. Through the back door, my project was conceived independently, but when everything came together, when I found out that there had never been a book about the conservatory at all, and then it was the centennial, and then that they needed to get they're trying to raise $3.5 million just for the restoration to finish that part. Well, and because it's the budget funding situation it is, the city, of course, is saying, well, we don't have money anymore
for not much of anything,
right? And I do know that it takes about $450,000 or just under $500,000 a year to pay for the conservatory. Mm. And it's always been free. So now everybody's scrambling to figure out, you know, everybody would like it to stay free. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. So one of the things that they did at the conservatory, it's so interesting to watch how they're trying to raise money. People who don't really know anything about it, but it's essential. So I've been meeting with people from the city and hiring consultants and working up alternative plans. But it's such a cute little place. You can't do that much without changing the character.
Yeah. So, what is your background in? You talked about being a graphic artist, and what is your input into the book? Did you write the whole book and took all the pictures? Did you design the book and the cover and
everything?
You did everything.
Everything. I had so many hats on, my head was hot. It's like. First, I get this idea for the book, and I figure, well, I can do that because I'm a book designer. I know how to use InDesign and lay out a long document. It's just one of these basic skills. But the thing about working for a project for yourself, especially a big project, is that when you work for a client, especially on a complex project, you always have people to bounce things off of, right? You always have someone to say, well, do you like this font or this font? You present them with two choices and they pick what they like. Well, in this one, it was just me.
Mm.
That was hard, Daryl.
A team of one.
A team of one. And, you know, this is one of those situations when running things past your friends and saying, so what do you think of this layout? And they say, great. It's not helpful. It's just not helpful. What was really helpful was I have one friend, Blair O'Neill, who now lives in the Reno area, he said, have you thought about making this kind of an adjustment? I mean, he actually gave me feedback, thank God. And my daughter, Lila, she went through all those photos, hundreds and hundreds of photos, and she would say something like, Mom, I really don't like it when the tips of the flower petals are cut off. It really bugs me. So, oh, thank you.
Gotcha.
But that kind of input, because most people, they just say, oh, that's so nice, Sarah. You know, it's like, So the project did evolve from being a book designer, but the idea of what's the word? I guess just the record keeping of something that was beautiful that was completely unremarked. Because at the conservatory, their senior gardener, the head gardener there, his name is David Helgeson. He is so modest. I mean, he does these exquisite works of art, and it is art.
Yeah, sure.
It really is. They put together, these plant combinations of golden grass with dark purple leaves and some lavender, I don't know, whatever it is. And you look and you say, oh my God, that's so gorgeous. And then 2 weeks later, it's over and they just move it out and do something else. Something else. Nobody takes a picture. Nobody makes notes. Nothing. They just do it and change it. I said, that's not right.
It's hard to believe in this day and age when people document everything.
Everything.
And I know, so I moved to Seattle 10 years ago and, I remember seeing, and I know that this is a case where I came from back in Ohio and like probably anywhere you go, but I know for sure in Seattle I noticed there was like these little books like all over the place about all the different neighborhoods and everything. And there was never one, you know, there's a whole series of books and you can find them all about Beacon Hill or all about Capitol Hill or whatever, but not specifically about any of the particular areas or the part of the parks or something, which is kind of surprising. Had you had any relationship or communication with the conservatory itself while you were doing this or before you started or this?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask because first I dream up the idea. The first idea was, well, I'm going to come back every month and I'm going to take pictures of how it changes because that was the original idea. Oh, my God, it's changing. So I come back and then I figure right away I better meet somebody in the conservatory. That's a good idea, right? Yeah. So because in my work as a graphic artist, because I'm involved in the Graphic Artist Guild and I'm the president of the local chapter, it helps to talk to people. I mean, I just learn. Always find somebody and talk to them. So anyway, so I find the manager of the gift shop. Person in the gift shop, and she's very nice, Hope Lassiter. And I said, you know, I'm taking some pictures and I want to do something with it. I'm not sure what. And I said, I was thinking of a calendar because that's what everybody thinks of. They're nice pictures and what a great idea. She said, no, don't do that. She just shot it down. I said, why? I said, it'd be great for a calendar. She said, oh, we don't sell too many calendars, really. She said, maybe only like 10 in a year or something like that. And it's like, oh.
Not even one a month.
But then I thought about it. And I did a little research because I learned about calendars that usage is going down.
Sure, because it's all in your phone everything. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
It does. Yeah. And the older generation likes calendars on the wall.
We used to get like 10 calendars a year from different places.
It's over. So it's over in that regard, just the way life is. And then the other thing about calendars that is not apparent is that when you have a window of time to sell it, and that is the fall of the preceding year. And once that window closes, those calendars are the recycle bin.
Who's going to buy a calendar for 2012 like now?
It would be landfill.
Kind of silly, yeah.
They're valued. Yeah. They're completely valueless. So I thought, nah, it's not so good. You know, I thought. And then the idea occurred to me, a book. And I thought, oh, my God. And that was like holding my nose and jumping off a cliff. I swear to God, book, you're going to do it. Well, so.
Did you have a conversation with them about the book idea?
I did. And she thought that could be a good idea. But when I learned that there had never been a book ever.
Yeah.
And that nothing. I mean, they had some postcards there.
Sure.
But that, and I have a mouse pad. But that's it. They were very excited. And when I did say that I would donate part of the proceeds to them. So they were very excited. And they have given me a lot of assistance in that. The big assistance that they did was in identifying all the plants for me.
Mm.
Because I wanted the book to be not only...
beautiful, but educational.
That's right. Useful.
Yeah.
Practical. And it even has an index, which probably in this lifetime no one will ask you to do an index, but if they do, don't do it.
Note to myself. Don't do an index. Okay.
Do not do index. They gave me a Word document. It's a few pages long, right? Yeah. It has all the names of the plants and all the page numbers. And of course, there's common names and scientific names. I thought, how hard can it be? Whenever you hear yourself saying that, you know, danger, danger. So I thought, how hard can it be? You alphabetize a list in Word, and there's your index, right?
Those scientific names alone will make your head spin, won't they?
It took 40 hours.
Wow.
I kept track. It was at the end. There was no time to hire anybody. And even if there was time, it was such a – I realized it's such a gigantic job. It would have been thousands of dollars. I couldn't do that. So I just slogged through it. But it's brutal because you have to check. And there's a couple of errors. Just – one or two tiny errors, because nobody's going to proof it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, who's going to do that, right? It's like 20 million pieces of data and number and flipping back and forth and making sure everything is spelled right. It's like just to do it and hope that it's right was one of the biggest painfully. So, but it's done.
Most people aren't going to know the difference. Is that botany flowers?
Horticulture.
Horticulture. Like, the only person that you really have to worry about is the super horticultural nerds.
Well, yeah. So what I did do in the book, though, here, let me show you this, is that each page has, if it doesn't have a caption, it has these little teeny tiny little letters on it. So that if you're interested, what is this big leaf? There is a key that you can check in the back for...
That's really neat.
In the pink section there, which is separate from the index, which identifies...
That's practically a college course you've got there in your hands.
This is the plant ID. Yeah. And so, of course, what the conservatory did is give me the technical names of the plants, and it was up to me to make it happen.
I believe a lot of people are interested in that kind of stuff. I've been to a lot of groups and that where people just love plants and flowers. It's just the way it is.
Well, it's fun if you're browsing through it and you go, huh, this plant's leaves are the size of a dinner plate. I wonder what that is. You know, and you can...
So what is... I noticed you had that all sectioned off into months. Is that a reoccurring thing, like annually, or is this kind of like this segment of time, and say a year or two from now, does it rotate kind of the same way by the month or relatively close?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes and no. In some regards, it's dependent on, surprisingly, on the weather, because even though they do control certain things, they can't control the amount of sunlight because cloudy or sunny, and they can't control the main temperature. And then as a gardener, people know that different years, different things do well. So they have all these support greenhouses down below the conservatory with other gardeners and people who grow. Jeannie Schollmeyer is in charge of that. And what they do for the conservatory, they bring up the best, most beautiful specimens and put them in. Well, some years that could be the Brugmansia, and other years that might be lilies. You know, it might be something different. And not only that, there are some plants, I think they have like some special lily blooming now. It only blooms once every 5 or 8 years. Well, it's blooming now.
Wow.
You know, so you go there and you see it and it's beautiful, and then may never see it again. So this is blooming month by month, but it's only that year.
Yeah.
So
that camera that you brought over here, is that the camera you took every one of those pictures with?
Every single one.
And that's a digital camera, Canon. And what about the, you talked about, well, first of all, How did you decide which of the pictures to use?
Oh, man.
Because I know you said you had hundreds. You probably had more than hundreds.
Altogether, there were thousands, of course. Thousands.
So what was the real, before you initially you did it on your own, and then you got a couple people like your daughter and somebody to kind of look at. But initially, when you were on your own, what was the process that you were going through to decide?
Well, the most important thing for me is that the photo convey feeling. I've seen a lot of photos in my life. I once took a class in photography years ago in New York City, and this is before digital photography. And this teacher said, photographs, there are more photographs than any other man-made object in the world.
Makes a lot of sense.
And I don't know if that's true, Daryl, but it was food for thought, because even then, people had shoeboxes.
Yeah.
Everybody had a lot of photos.
I have a huge box of photos.
Right. Yeah. And now, holy Toledo.
Yeah.
You know, so I've seen a lot of pictures truly not worth looking at.
Yeah.
But there are photos that you look at them and they're just, this is great.
Yeah.
Oh, and I love that feeling. So for me, the first thing is when I was there at the conservatory and I was experiencing, oh my God, that's so gorgeous. I try and capture it on this little handheld camera. I don't like to use a tripod. I don't like fancy equipment because it gets in the way. I just want to experience the gorgeousness of the scene, hopefully capture it. And then when I'm looking at the picture later, does it convey that sense of, oh my God, this is gorgeous?
Yeah. You know?
Because you would be amazed at how not easy it is to capture that feeling. It takes a lot of doing. I'm sure everybody's had that experience of going somewhere with their camera, a wonderful experience. They take the picture, 1, 2, 10, they look at it and they go, oh, well, they're not very good, or God, it was so great, but it doesn't really show it. To me, that's the hook of photography, to try and get it to actually do that, you know? So looking at all these photos, of course, there's a rating system, and you look at them and throw these away, right? Well, okay, keep that. Oh, this one's pretty good. Oh, I love this one. So you look at the 50 or 200. Oh, I love this one for that month. And then you go, I guess we can't have 25 pictures of maidenhair ferns, even though I love them. You know, you have to edit.
It's very subjective too. And finding something that's universally appealing is a real,
that's right.
You know, we're talking a lot about art here, and that itself is an art, is the art of the decision-making and the picking.
Well, thanks. And of course, then once I got down to the wire there with the book, there were other considerations like, is this, I mean, like the highest, so some flowers are more photogenic than others.
Yeah.
Believe it or not. Some like the shiny ones, the anthuriums and the other, anything with any kind of gloss to it, those photograph beautifully. But the ones that are sort of dull, they have a look of, I don't know, the camera isn't quite good enough
yet. They can
yet.
Be absolutely beautiful in person, but the camera just doesn't lend itself to it. Sure, that makes a lot of sense.
Or like Brugmansia, which are these long angel trumpet things, right? And they go like this, and they have these spiky things. Well, in person, they're very graceful, and the forms are very compelling with the tips that curl up and the throat. Well, you take it and they look gross and awkward. I mean, some flowers are just hard. I don't know why. You try. I really want to get one that's worthy of this beautiful. It's hard. So a consideration is you can't have too many of the easy ones that, they all look great. And you kind of have to include some of the signature flowers or some of the more rare and unusual ones.
People are going to have a little bit of expectation about what they see when they open up that book.
I mean, it's not a completely comprehensive textbook, but you kind of need to include.
It would be like,
You can't leave out the
you
big
need,
guys.
You need right? like 10 volumes of it for that.
Oh, you yeah, got that yeah, right.
Exactly. So what about the, we talked about before we got rolling with the show about the computers and the software, the hardware and stuff. What kind of stuff did you have involved with the editing? Are you a Photoshop editor now, or are you an expert in all that stuff? Well, of course, with your design business.
I wouldn't call myself an expert. Yeah. Photoshop is a giant Ferrari of a program.
Yeah.
And I used to, see, I've been using it for a long time now, but I remember in the early years, I used to feel so intimidated. I just felt so bad because I would go to classes and I would go to seminars and I would read tutorials and I would do this. And I worked in the job and it was so hard to learn even these basic things, adjusting curves. What the heck is that? And you could study for years in this one Photoshop feature, right? Yeah. How to adjust curves in different situations. So finally, it helped me when I learned that Photoshop is not for any mere mortal to to master. It is designed to be used in such a wide application that you're not expected to be able to use every feature, to know what every feature is.
These guys are both nodding their head back there. They concur.
Right. It's yeah. It's very daunting.
Well, I think about that all the time. What do we use, like 10% of our brain? I imagine we probably don't even use 1% of what's capable on Photoshop or our computers in general, right?
That's right. That's right. It's a tiny slice. And not only that, there are so many technical issues. Just as an aside, so I used to work as a pre-press manager for a print shop when I lived in Northern California. And working in a business environment for a shop like that, you have to handle other issues. So it was good because you take in files from other people and you learn how to do it right, which is good. Well, a key issue is making sure that you get what you expect in printing. And people see what's on their monitor and they want to have printed results that look like that. And even in the store, of course, we had monitors and so the printed results are supposed to agree. And that's called color calibration, to get the monitor to agree with the well, this is such a gigantic technical thing. And I read articles and I studied and I didn't read actual whole books, okay. It's true. Yeah. But still, I put a lot of mental effort into it. Yeah. And I said, I cannot understand this. I cannot understand
daunting,
it.
It is
beyond me.
Yeah.
And I did really well in school. I said, I was kidding. I was kidding. I said, they ought to give a PhD in it. Guess what? They give a PhD in color calibration.
Yeah, I believe it.
It is that complex.
I believe
So why should we feel inadequate if we can't figure out how to do it? You know, it's like, let somebody who's studied it for 8 years do it.
Yeah, I just remember going to the Kinko's and like with all my magazines and stuff and cutting everything up and making the flyers for the bands and stuff that we used to play. And I used to mess around with the enlarging and the lightening and darkening. That's pretty much the extent of art design work. Yeah.
Well, InDesign is the program that all graphic designers use. There used to be competition from Quark, but InDesign has won. So, of course, the bandwagon of the latest technology is always very challenging.
It's great. So why is this project so important? Why does this matter?
Well, it matters to the conservatory. I think they're happy. I know they're happy. Hopefully, some money will be donated, but such a beautiful treasure for Seattle. It's an icon. And to let it be threatened and then to not even have any kind of record, that was painful for me.
Great. So would you say that's the thing that you're most passionate about as it relates to this particular project, or is there something else?
My passion is the art part, is the feeling that making the image, and hopefully with the skill and practice I have, to make the image so that someone else can see that image either in a book or on my blog lovethatimage.com/blog. There's a great image on there right now, too. It's a really great one on top, one of my all-time faves. And have somebody go, oh, wow, that's it for me.
So you've done an interesting thing that we've talked about before the show, that you kind of came full, I don't know if it's necessarily full circle or half circle, on this project where you took the book itself and turned it into a completely different type of art project with your daughter.
Thank you for...
Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Oh, that is a fun story.
So, well, I love it because I've got something to relay with you about that when you're done.
It is a fun story. So before I tell you that story, let me say that making a book is one thing. Publishing a book is one thing. Selling a book is something else. It's just like the difference between being an artist and learning how to use hardware and software. It's completely different skill set. So, there I was, trying to sell the book because, you know, that's what you have to do. You made the book, now you have to sell the book. So we took it to a crafts fair in Bellevue, last fall in November. And I thought, well, these are people who have a few bucks and everybody loves flowers and it's a great gift item and why not? We'll do well. So, of course, selling a book one-on-one is one thing, but at a table at a big event like that is kind of something else. You have to have the right display, which I don't think we really had. So we have these stacks of books and it was really odd. People would walk up to the table and go, so... What is this? What are you selling? I'm thinking, are you a moron? I'm from New York. I'm sorry.
Sell the book.
How could you not know? But some nice lady later, I said, how can they not know? She said, well, maybe you're selling like timeshares or something. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. Insurance.
Well, that's because marketing itself is an art.
It is. And well, that's certainly true. But this in-person thing was like a whole other thing. And I wasn't doing it. I clearly wasn't doing it right. So we're sitting there, not that much interest. That's a little discouraging. And nearby us were these several jewelry booth things. And they are freaking mobbed. Yeah. I mean, mobbed. And they are women of all ages.
Yeah.
Old ladies, young girls. You know, housewives, soccer mom,
women
everybody.
Women love their jewelry, though, don't they?
Apparently so. Yeah. Apparently, you can never have too many earrings. So I'm looking at this. And that's very nice. And Lila, my daughter, says to me, Mom, she said.
I love the way this is going. Anyhow, go ahead.
It was so great. She said, Mom, she said, we need to get more people over here. She said, people like jewelry. She said, why don't we make some jewelry out of this damaged copy of the book? And I said, excuse me? And she said, yes, I saw it on Pinterest. Pinterest,
go, Michael.
Right? Changed my life.
He said that was a good one.
I said, what? And she said, yes, I saw this thing. And so next thing I know, we order some little glass tile things. And I learned that the thing on the top is called a bail, B-I-I-L, which I didn't know. And we're doing experiments. And next thing I know, I am in the jewelry business because you know what? People love this stuff.
Yeah. Is that one of the pieces?
It is.
I love it.
And the earring.
Oh, great. I did not know that. Was.
This is a piece of a hyacinth. I can
so
find the page number.
So what you did was you took pages from the damaged book.
Cut them out.
Glue
them onto the back of the glass. So what's on the back, here I brought a different sample because sometimes what's on the back is like also
as
cute.
Beautiful as what's on the front.
Yeah, sometimes it's like reversible, which is really fun.
It's like those jackets that we used to wear when we were younger. You could turn them inside out and get a whole other look.
I learned that in the jewelry business, this is called dual. I didn't know. So we made necklaces, we made earrings, and we're starting to do this, and it is successful.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting to me that
I love it. Yeah.
It's wild.
You got a smart daughter there, don't you? Yeah, it's cool.
Well, when she was little, when she was little, we didn't have a lot of money, and I believe in creativity. And I would do things like when you buy pizza, they used to have like a little like support thing that would keep the pizza.
Yeah, a little plastic thing in the middle. Yeah, sure.
So we'd take this thing and say, okay, what can we do with this, right? So she, so that'd be a dollhouse table or something, and the and make dollhouses out of shoebox stapled together and stuff like. So I always tried to encourage.
So you honored and nurtured the artist that she already had inside her. Yeah.
Well,
that's beautiful.
The idea, the concept of a new idea, though, is a wonderful thing.
That's a great idea.
It's a great idea. So.
So I want to tell my story based on that because when you told me that. So back in about 30 years ago in the early 1980s when I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, I used to play in bands and crazy like rock bands. And a friend of mine, Karen, we used to listen. This was records. We had the record players and the record albums and stuff like that. And we kind of had the same type of a thing with the records. And one of the records got damaged. I won't get into how, but that's not important. But what she did was... Because we all played in bands together and played the guitars and the drums and had the records and, you know, we just kind of did our thing. And she had taken these damaged records, broke them up into pieces, wound them up with the guitar strings and stuff, and made earrings and bracelets and necklaces. And they were really, really cool.
I'm
pretty confident. I used to wear earrings. It's been a number of years. But I'm pretty confident I still have one of those earrings from like 30 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I brought up some memories about that. And I love that. I didn't know when you were wearing that until you pieced it together. But I love that idea.
The jewelry thing has been really fun. And it's interesting to me because the book is a wonderful, wonderful thing. People do love flowers. But as I learned in Bellevue that day, the number of people who like flowers is big, but the number of people who like jewelry is like enormous.
It's like we were talking about before the show. We're going to take a break here, but I'll say that we had been talking about a particular podcast that somebody else was doing, or no, it was some type of a blog or a video blog or something, and it was about food and cooking.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty convinced that if you have that type of topic, jewelry, and for instance, and food, it's going to lend itself. I mean,
sex.
Yeah. Sex. Yeah.
That's
going to be our next podcast.
Really?
Anyhow. So we're going to be back with some more. And we're here with episode 41 of Greener Views. And we're here with Sarah Chapman from Flowers of Volunteer Park Conservatory.
Right.
But there's so much more as well, as we've already found out. And we're going to come back and dig in a little deeper and find out what makes you tick. So we'll be right back.
You are listening to Greener Views.
Gravity connects me to the earth, which connects me to people who connect me to myself more honestly. And gravity connects me to the crust, which connects to the leaves on the trees that make it possible to breathe. With naive mind shield like a helmet, they would tell us that we don't know how we feel or how to connect with other people on the planet. Oh, if we only knew the power in each blue disillusioned little. In the vision of one resides all, destroy the individual, for this is critical. The self ain't everything, hands to grasp, to cling, to mask material vastly shipwrecked beings. At last, release the greed amassed with capitalist tasks and contact the mass. Communication is all we have, and dwindling fast.
Welcome back to episode 41 of Greener Views. We're here with Sarah Chapman from Volunteer Park Flowers Conservatory.
Listen
you
up.
Take those words and shuffle them around, you'll get what it's all about. And so we wanted to bring up one little thing before we get into the next part about the equipment and the camera. What do you want to say about that?
Well, thanks, Daryl. What I wanted to say about that is I want to encourage people to take the photos they want to take. even if, as one photographer, Julianne Cost, said, even if it's only pictures of flowers in your backyard, when she said that, I cringed. Oh, God. She said, keep taking them because you get better. And the point that I want to make is not just take what you feel like taking, whether it's laundry or, you know, whatever it is, but do not feel that you need an $8,000 camera to take a good photo. And a lot of times in the world of photography, men don't take this personally, but it's kind of a boys' club. And the boys like their toys.
Yeah.
And they like the newest gadgets. And it's like, that's the only good camera, is the newest camera with all the features. That is so cool. And you look at this camera and you can't figure it out. And it's heavy and it's big and it's complicated. And even the little screens give you a headache. That's not what a good photo is about. So I'd like to say, do not be daunted by a fancy camera, but learn to use the auto setting and the macro setting, the little flower, you know, symbol on your camera, and work with it, master those, and then maybe learn one new feature a week on your camera, and you will become as good or better a photographer as the people who have the camera bag that is giving them a sprain back. So.
I completely agree. I have a relatively inexpensive camera that's older that I bought off online. And to be honest with you, I just want to be able to zoom it in and out and to push the button. And if it gets into any of the complicated stuff, when it doesn't start giving me the pictures that I like, I just get another camera.
That's right.
So you were talking about, even if it's just flowers in your backyard, I think they probably told, was it Ansel Adams that used to draw the flowers and stuff?
Did they give him a hard time?
They must. Somebody must have. I'm just drawing pictures of flowers.
Yeah,
well,
it's just flowers, right.
So I was trying to get your back on that one.
And, you know, there's a nice story she told with that. Julianne Cost wrote a book called Window Seat. And I heard about her. It was a podcast, as a matter of fact. And she was speaking about, apparently she was frightened of air travel, and she works for Adobe, and so she had to do a lot of travel. And so how she would deal with her fear of flying is she would always get a window seat, and she'd take pictures outside of the ground and whatever, and that's what she did. Well, the funny part is she has a daughter, and she was telling about how her daughter would say, "Oh, Mom, not more pictures of that." Can you just hear it, right?
I can't imagine the pictures of outside the window of an airplane are going to be all that great.
Oh, it's a wonderful book. Yeah, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. Well, a lot of the takeoff and landing of the landforms.
It's when you're closer to the ground. I thought it was when you're
sometimes
30,000 feet up. I can't imagine.
Sometimes the clouds, the sky, it's beautiful.
There you go.
And she cared. And she cared, and she kept doing it, and she had 5,000 pictures. And yeah. And so, but the funny part was how her daughter is like rolling her eyes and saying, "Oh, Mom, not
out the plane window picture.
Please." Yeah. And that's how I felt, because I would take all these pictures, and I love my husband, but, you know, he doesn't care. What does he want to look at that for? Of course not. And
if he really loved you, he'd care.
I do have one friend that likes to look at photos, and she will look at a bunch. But like my sister, if you show her more than three pictures, she said, "Oh, that's enough, Sarah. Yeah. I've seen enough." So the point is that we get discouraged because those people right close to us may not be the best audience for what we want to do. And that's why it was important to me to go ahead with this project for the book and keep going with it, even though my husband doesn't care. It's like my sister doesn't care, but I cared.
Yeah.
I cared. And other people do care.
Well, they're beautiful pictures and beautiful flowers, and I can't imagine that there's not plenty of people that love flowers. I mean, so this is the point where we dig a little deeper into Sarah Chapman and find out what she's all about. So we got a few questions here that we have as a staple to our show. So give us the motto or the mission statement for your life.
Well, my first motto was perseverance furthers. That was my very first motto. But I think, and then in the hippie era, it was more like love is the answer. But then life got complicated, and that has like a second part. If the answer isn't more love, it's scheduling. And that is my own, and it's true.
Yeah.
If you can solve any problem with those two approaches,
yeah,
either a more open heart or just make it work in your calendar. Just put it, because really that's what most people complain about, right? I can't do this and I can't figure out that. And how am I ever going to do that? It's like, just schedule it.
So love still is the answer, but good organization helps as well.
It does.
Great. So who or what has had the greatest influence on your life so far?
You know, now I'm 63 years old. There's a lot of influences.
Well, give us one or two. Whatever comes to mind.
Well, Eastern thought, if we could start with the most spiritual. I was lucky enough to meet Swami Muktananda in 81. And I think Eastern thought has sort of calmed me and helped me understand the bigger questions. And that stays with you. So that's good. Because growing up in New York as a atheistic Jewish person, you sort of don't know. It's like everything is confusing, you know. But so,
it's a little rough and gruff, too.
A little bit. So on that level, that sort of, once I learned about that kind of thought, it just kind of helped me get a little less nutso mentally. And then artistically, growing up in New York, that's the best part of New York, really, is that you can go to a different museum every day of the year. I mean, it's just, there's so much. The Metropolitan Museum, I just went back. Do you know that they don't know how many rooms are in there at the information desk? It's like a mile and a half, but I don't know. It's like, now I've forgotten. It's at least 1,000 rooms.
Wow.
And it's just, it's boggling. So you're exposed to a lot of stuff. And I think that the great art, and by when I say great art, I mean what I personally think is great art. I do not mean what the tour guide thinks is great art or the critics or anything.
Yeah.
If something doesn't speak, it's like, well, it may be great art to somebody else. But the photographers like Weston and Adams and even O'Keefe, who is not a photographer, but you ever go to a museum and you've seen reproductions of these paintings, and they're very nice in the reproduction, and then you go in person and it's a whole other experience. And that's happened to me several times. And so I really believe in the experience of going and putting yourself physically in front of these works of art. One of the reasons I like photography is because it's not as dependent.
Yeah. I would imagine that going to the conservatory, the experience there is extremely equal.
It's ecstatic.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, well, we're lucky.
Yeah, we sure are. So what about a recent movie or book, aside from your own, that's been inspirational to you?
The last movie that I remember that I loved was The King's Speech.
Oh, I've heard a lot of good things about it. I've never seen it.
I loved that movie. It was all in balance. It had a quirky guy playing the doctor who helps the king, who I'd just seen the night before as the captain in the Johnny Depp pirate movies. So there's an actor with range for you. But I don't watch television. I don't have time to see a lot of movies, and I don't know why. I can't remember the last book I read, but I do read books. But what's the last book you read that was good?
It's a book that I'm reading right now. It's called Speciesism. It's about the whole idea about, hierarchy of species, and that we think as human beings that we're better than animals, and that we're like more advanced and greater just because we can walk and talk and write books and have podcasts and stuff. But the truth of the matter is in the circle of things and the course of things that no one species is better or has any dominion over another.
What a hippie you are.
I've been told that from one of my extremely conservative friends.
I know. Tree hugger and proud, right? Yeah.
So, what's one thing that most anyone can do to have a positive impact in the world?
Wow, what a question. What one person can do, they can only affect themselves. I mean, you can't really change another person. And I learned that because I was married a long time ago. And of course, being young and foolish, I naturally tried to change my husband, right?
I would say,
how to just make him try, why don't you do this? And how come you don't?
It worked out delightfully, I assume.
Didn't it work out? And I couldn't understand why he was so defensive. But then what I learned a little late, when you try and change yourself, it's very difficult. Even when you're motivated, even when you sincerely want to change. Mm. And when I learned and I really understood how hard that is to actually change yourself, I realized it's completely hopeless to try and change anybody else. So you have to let go of that. So the only person you can change is yourself, and that's hard. It's really hard. But I believe that when you do become a more okay person, whatever that is to you, a better person, a more comfortable person, more loving, more satisfied, kinder, whatever, I think that sort of radiates. I think we do get inspired by, you meet someone, they have a beautiful smile,
yeah.
Right? And you feel, right? You feel like, oh, they are so nice or something. I think that we can do that we can kind of radiate things for people to just maybe pick up.
I love that. You can't change another person, but if you take care of yourself the right way, then you can, then it does become infectious and you can be an inspiration to someone else and you don't have to push anything on them, but your example is potentially an example for another person.
Well, I think so because that's what's happened to me. I mean, think about the people you've met that have had an impact. A lot of times they weren't even trying to have an impact. They yeah. just were.
It's all about the thing that you were talking about earlier about the people that maybe weren't so jazzed about your flowers, but there's plenty of people that are. So it's also a matter of finding the people that you can, equally feed and inspire each other. And the people that are good matches for you, and then you can grow and develop as a person that way. But anyhow, I guess we're getting into some pretty heavy stuff here. Why don't we just move on? So how do people get a hold of you? Give us whatever phone numbers, email, websites,
okay.
Twitter, Facebook, whatever it is that you want to throw out there.
Well,
Pinterest.
I don't have a Pinterest site
yet. We don't
yet.
Have one yet either.
But I was thinking, I did see a blog that said, that said pin it, and I got to get that on my blog yeah. because that is a cool that's
it's
good.
The fastest right the fastest growing social media site on the planet, Pinterest, right?
This is why it's good to have children,
at least of late. I mean, at the time,
well, it's not a site,
this is the benefit of having children yeah. because there comes a point where they know stuff
and they can mow the lawn for you.
Yeah they could yeah. I think I would never know about this stuff if it. Thank you, Lila.
Yeah.
Okay, so the website is lovethatimage.com, and the blog. You should look at the blog.
Okay.
Click that little tab on the right there that has. I keep feeding that thing. It's 4 years now. I've been throwing photos a few times a week up there. It's Sarah's fave photos. The ones of all the pictures you take. There's a few. You go, wow, that's good, if I do say so myself. So I like to put the, and now we don't have time to talk about how addictive blogging is, Daryl, but when people all over the world put little comments that, oh, this is great, I love this photo, it's like, it's very motivating.
It's got to be very rewarding, sure.
It is. Phone number, you can reach me at 206-439-3337. You can reach me by email, Sarah, that's S-A-R-A, at lovethatimage.com.
And you want to spell Chapman, too, for us?
C-H-A-P as in Peter, M-A-N.
Great. So upcoming events.
Oh, thank you, Daryl. What we have, the conservatory is having their big centennial celebration on Sunday, August 12th.
Victorian Day. That Victorian. Sounds so noble. You got that zoomed in there? Croquet tournament. I love it.
Yes, my husband is going to be one of the croquet officials.
Yeah, I grew up in Ohio, so croquet and badminton and horseshoes, that's pretty much how I spent my youth.
They're also going to have a Sousa
lawn
band.
Lawn darts? I'm sorry.
No lawn darts, but a barbershop quartet, the Sousa, a Sousa band, horse and carriage rides, a vintage.
That's unfortunate, but anyhow,
well,
go ahead.
For the horse.
Exactly.
Well, maybe he likes it. A vintage fire truck, a large wheel bicyclist.
Sweet.
I know, and all kinds of stuff. People are encouraged to come in costume. There will be a costume prize. And at 5, I think it's at 5 o'clock, they're having a champagne and birthday cake, you know, a toast thing.
That sounds there. Like fun.
Yeah.
I love barbershop quartets.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're one of my things.
Okay.
If everybody was wondering out there what one of my things are, you can
barbershop
chalk up
quartets.
Barbershop quartets.
Add it up. And I will be there signing books.
Great.
Also.
So before we go, any last words or words of wisdom or, wise advice? This is your one chance to be brief and sage-like.
Love and scheduling?
Love and scheduling.
That's my best.
I love that. That's a good thing to have as the best. Well, thank you so much, Sarah Chapman. On behalf of Randy and Michael and myself, this has been episode 41 of Greener Views. And if you'd like to advertise or be a sponsor or donate or send any kind of feedback about the guests or any potential guests or topics or ideas for the future, please email us at info@greenerviews.net, or you can call 206-650-4587. I almost forgot the phone number there. You can please check out ambrosiadigitalmedia.com and check out healthyhomecast.com. On next episode number 42, I just happened to remember we're going to have Nora Lenz here from Raw Schools talking about the raw food diet and what that's all about. So that's it, everybody. Thanks a lot. Have a great night. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. Greener Views is part of the Healthy Homecast Network. Check out all their conscientious and sustainably focused podcast programs and businesses at healthyhomecast.com. Greener Views is created, developed, and produced by Daryl Whalen. Our audio engineer is Randy Parcell. Our video producer is Michael Schwartz of AmbrosiaDigitalMedia.com. Music for this episode was provided by Slapjazz.com, DanFajans.bandcamp.com, and JDHobson.com. Your feedback is important. Please feel free to contact us with any comments or questions, including suggestions for guests and program topics. You can call us at 206-650-4587 or send a direct email to info@greenerviews.net. Be sure to check back often. New episodes coming soon.